Hey there, this is Mobile Agent TV, helping agents stay on the cutting edge from coast to coast.
Welcome to Mobile Agent TV. I am Michael Thorne of RE/MAX Little Oak Realty in Langley, BC. And our co-host, as always, is Dave Faulkner from Bridgewater, New Jersey. He's RE/MAX Preferred Professionals in the Enviro Realty team. Dave, favorite pizza topping of all time?
Plain pizza. Plain pizza. I don't like a lot of toppings, but plain pizza.
Does that mean just cheese and marinara sauce?
Cheese and sauce. You got it. We got a lot of pizzerias here in New Jersey, too, boy.
During the show, you can interact with us live using the hashtag MATVLive, as well as I will enable the Q&A feature so you can ask us and our guest questions during the show, and we'll keep an eye on that during the show. Real excited to be speaking at the Super Sales Rally next Thursday. So if you're an agent here in Western Canada, or I would imagine in the northwest of the U.S., it's going to be in New West, just outside Vancouver. Going to be a great event. Also want to thank everyone that watched or listens to our show afterwards on iTunes. Our audience is becoming, that's where the predominant amount of people that are actually watching or listening to the show is, on the audio podcast afterwards. So if you're not downloading the audio podcast, you can find us on iTunes and on Stitcher Radio. Dave, I know that you're pretty excited for the show. I'm excited for the show. We've done 69 episodes. And we've had a couple of them that are like are going to be classic episodes, and I just got a gut feeling that that this is going to be one of them.
I feel the same way. We always talk about it here that things are changing, you know, and you better get on the boat and the whole thing and all the little things we've said. But now we have a source like you know, with real data that shows what we've been talking about is all true. It's happening, and if you're going to wait around, by the time you get done, something else to wait for. So this is cool.
On that note, I would like to introduce today's guest. It is Steve Murray, who is the president and editor at Real Trends and one of the co-authors of the book Game Changers, The Unfounded Fears and Future Prosperity of the Residential Real Estate Industry. And as always, we read out our guest's 160 Twitter bio. You can get Real Trends on Twitter at Real Trends. Residential real estate leaders look to us for timely and trusted information and analysis through our consulting, newsletters, conferences, and publications. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Hey, thanks for having me, Michael. Dave.
thanks for being here. Before we get into what I think is one of the most important books for people that are inside our industry to read in the last maybe 5 or 10 years, Game Changers, why don't you give our audience a little bit of your history in the real estate space, and then let us know what it is that what's Real Trends' role in the real estate industry.
Well, this is my 38th year in the residential real estate industry. I was in relocation and franchise sales and ran a national real estate network early in my career. I founded Real Trends with a partner, former partner Lori Mormore, back in 1987. So we're in our 28th year of publishing at Real Trends. We basically created, Lori and I created Real Trends, and I bought her interest out, it's been 12 years ago now. You know, we founded it because at that time there was no credible, reliable source of trends information about the residential real estate industry. There just wasn't out there. So we started a newsletter as a way to deliver trends information, and today it's one of, you know, 15 different things we do, but that's still our focus, is providing reliable, credible information, whether it's consulting or publishing.
Fantastic. Now, before we get into Game Changers, there's one more thing I wanted to ask you about. You guys have a flagship event called Soaring with the Eagles. And I'm just going to throw up a photo up on the screen. Why don't you explain a little bit? I don't know if you can see it yet, guys. This photo, you're sitting down having a one-on-one conversation with President George W. Bush. What was that all about, and what was that like?
Well, we have it's called the Gathering of Eagles. It's in its 26th year, and we reached out several years ago to start bringing speakers from outside the industry to this conference. This is a CEO conference. 300 or so people come each year. I just thought some years ago, we'd had Roger Staubach and Paul DePodesta and Senator Bill Bradley. And I said, well, you know what? Let's get, our theme is leadership. Let's get a guy who, like, had the biggest job on the planet, leadership. So we literally just called President Bush's people and said, would he consider being on stage and sharing some, you know, his life with us? And to our great surprise and honor, he said, you bet. So we happened to have the conference that year in Dallas. It wasn't more than a few miles from where he lives. And then he surprised us again by saying, I don't like giving speeches. I just want to do Q&A. And they had to vet me. The Secret Service had to check me out so that I could sit up there. And then we went over a list of approved questions. I mean, it was a highlight of my life to sit with the former president. And we had actually had a lot of fun. He is not only a great leader, but he's truly just a real guy and has a great sense of humor.
And was there something in that conversation, a nugget or a moment that might sit with you more than others throughout that conversation?
You know, we asked him about 9/11, and he gave a lot of information that I think most people had never even knew what that whole day was like for him. But I think rather the thing that I will never forget is we were talking about leadership and building leaders. And it was really interesting. One of the things he responded with, he said, I'll tell you what, one of the things that's most affected my life is that I always knew I had unconditional love from my parents, who are the best people in the world. And he said, nobody could have better parents than I did. And he literally looked at the audience and said, you want to create great leaders, treat them the way you would treat your kids and your grandkids. Give them unconditional trust and love, and they will flourish. He said, there's no way I could have taken the risks I did with my life and my career without that kind of love and support. I mean, that was like one of the, you know, he said a lot of things that had nothing to do with what it's like being president of the United States, but that was the one I'll never forget.
Fantastic. Yep. So now let's get right into Game Changers. One of the best reviews I've read about the book, Steve, comes from our co-host Dave, who texted me the other day, and I'm going to quote his review that came through. Reading Game Changers, can't put it down, 2 exclamation marks. Vanessa is yelling, the next is all in caps. Dinner is on the table, 2 exclamation marks. It's good. 3 exclamation marks. Dave, just give us your review, and so far, what is it that you found so compelling about Game Changers?
Well, I haven't finished it yet, because we have the challenges of business every day, but I've got about, I don't know, probably 30-40% of the way through it. And to me, a lot of the stuff has been kind of apparent to me all along, you know, not the little details of what's going on with each individual chapter that they wrote in the book, but, you know, we talk about it all the time here on the show, that the change is happening so quick, and the things that are forcing the changes and totally out of our control to some degree. And this was just, to me, I kept reading it and going, you know what, now this is like real data. They interviewed 3,000 people. They interviewed 180 top brokers, and they're all pretty much saying the same thing we've been saying all along to some degree, and I'm like going, like, now it's validated. You know, and at the end of the show, here's what we're going to say. You're going to ask me for my takeaway. I'll give it to you right now. It's, you know, the boat's leaving the pier. You better get on it because you're going to get left behind. And it's as simple as that. To me, it was fascinating. As I did, I couldn't put it down. I couldn't put it down. Go to sleep.
Yeah, Steve. I've read the book. I think it's fascinating. It's fantastic. I know a lot of our viewers that are watching the show right now are digesting it as we speak, because we've been talking about it the last couple of weeks, Steve. But what's the catalyst of writing the book? What was it that you were trying to have the industry see or discover, or was it just transparency? Let's just see where we are and where we're going, because the book sort of looks towards 2025, 10 years down the road. What could happen if certain things were to be triggered over the next few years? What would the industry look like in 2025? So let us just speak to the catalyst of the book.
Well, you know, the Lorne Wallace and Lon Welsh and I had talked for some period of time about doing a book. We didn't know what we were going to do it about. When we first started talking, and we came up with the idea is, look, why don't we write about what everybody's talking about? all the complaining and the worries and the angst and the anxiety, we came up with a list of actually 15 to 20 areas that all three of us had heard people talking about. And we concluded, well, you can't write a book about, you know, 20 things people are worried about. It's just too much. So we concluded, well, let's form this book up. let's take eight of the biggest concerns people have in this industry, the things people gnash their teeth about, and let's not make any judgments about what we think, the three of us think. Let's go research and find out both from agents and brokers and MLS and association and national leaders, and then let's also survey consumers. So we hired Harris Interactive to do a whole recent buyer and recent seller study, and let's gather all that, and then let's see, let's take all that, and then let's write a book that says, all right, everybody says commission rates are going down. Everybody says, oh, the commission rates go, why is it going down? So each chapter we go, what are the forces moving this change? What's causing it? What's underneath? What are the forces opposed? What's the probability it's going to happen? If it does happen, how big of an impact is it going to be? And then we talked about implications if it does. And then lastly, we came up with the best input from all the people we interviewed and the research with the agents and brokers. What are the solutions? If it does happen, so in that, you know, the chapter on commission rates and gross commission, we do all the research. It turns out when you boil it all down, the reason commission rates are falling is primarily because agents compete with each other for listings, and one of the ways they compete is by the price of their service, which is like, that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody. It's been going on forever. But a lot of people thought, oh, it's discount broker, or it's internet, or it's Zillow, or it's this, or it's that. Has nothing to do with that. Has to do with agents competing with each other. So in each chapter, that's what we did. We took it and said, what really is the impact? What's going on here that's causing this? So that's kind of what we did. We, from start to finish, start of research to delivery of the book, took us about 4 months.
So, and truly, the way it's broken down and it's segmented is really really great too as well. So Steve, I heard you give an interview when you're saying, and the question was asked of you, what was the sort of the most surprising thing about the book, about the data that you received? And your answer was that things aren't that different as they always have been. And this is something Dave's been talking about, that the principles of real estate haven't changed, to which I completely agree with, in the relationships with our clients. Where I think it is completely different is we're no longer the keepers of the data, which is fantastic, right? In my opinion, we're not the keepers of the data. Technology has dramatically changed the expectations and the type of relationships we have with our client. The way we market ourselves and reach has dramatically changed. So maybe the one-on-one, belly-to-belly, toes-to-toes hasn't changed, but I think because I've been in the business for 21 years, we're not using the MLS catalog anymore. Things have dramatically changed. Response time and value proposition and the fact that we have to be counselors versus just the keepers of the data. So even though things haven't changed in the relationship, in my opinion, things have dramatically changed in the way that we do our day in and day out business.
Right.
So just speak to that. Am I wrong about that or just speak to that idea?
No, I mean, one of the things in the research, and part of it's Real Trends research, which is tracking top agents and top teams, and we had a chapter on counselors and facilitators, and we were able to access a lot of that data we do. One of the real surprises is, you know, is that consumers really haven't changed their appetite to use agents. I mean, if you think about it, you know, with everything that's available information-wise, you would think, given the level of intelligence and skill level of people, that they would stop using agents. You know, look, I can do this, and there's lots of tools available, and I can do it myself and make judgments about price, but that's not what we found at all. We didn't find it at all. On the counter side, and how they choose agents hasn't changed that much. What we have found is what they expect out of an agent in terms of responsiveness, in terms of counseling? Like, I'm looking at all this data we heard from the consumers. I'm looking at all this data on, you know, fill in the site name, realtor.com, Zillow, whoever. But some of this doesn't make sense to me. And so, actually, it's not just agents shifting into more of a counselor role. That's what the consumers really have always wanted from them. Mm-hmm. But now, that is where the value is. And it is the nitty-gritty of the transaction. You know, when we surveyed the consumers, what was the number one thing they wanted out of agents was, got ready for this, even with all the data? Guidance on pricing.
Yeah.
It's not, everybody said, oh, they'll trust the computer more than the person. We didn't see it. Percentage of people using the agent hasn't changed in 15 years that we're tracking it. It just was surprising that you got a whole industry that, like, they all need to take Valium because they're so afraid of what consumers will do. And I'm saying the consumer wants a great agent more than ever. Because think about the people that made mistakes in 2006 and 7 and 8 and 9. Shoot, the ones who may be making the mistakes in Western Canada and Toronto today, thinking, oh, it'll always just go up.
Yeah.
Now, we don't think Canada's going to drop like the U.S. did. You have safeguards in your banking system that, you know, probably prevent that kind of thing. But you know what? No market goes up forever. But think about that. Even with everything we've been through in the U.S. market particularly, they still trust agents. They still trust a referred agent. They still need their help and say they need their help and all that. So it's kind of surprising, you know, with everything that's changed, that's what the customer's saying. A lot of the what we found on the surprising side is, again, I said it earlier, geez, the industry needs to like get their knickers out of a twist. You know, it's, ladies and gentlemen, if you do your job and you put yourself into this industry full time, if you become a master of the profession, you got no problems going into the future.
Michael, I love this guy. I love this guy.
No, they do. I mean, no, that's what all the
data says. They've been saying all along. It's that old adage, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Now the commission rate's going to drop, yes. Are we going to see more concentration and fewer agents? Yes. One of the things, once you finish reading the book, we tell people, so I got asked the other day in an interview, what's your biggest, I mean, all that aside, what's your biggest concern? I said, we've built, both Canada and the U.S., we built this thing I'll call the Realtor Marketplace. And the parts are the MLS, cooperation and compensation, and the realtors backing it up with rules and regulations. Too many people today take that for granted, and it's starting to fray at the edges. You got big agents, big productive teams and agents, they get real tired of handing half the commission over to agents that do 5% of the work or don't even know what they're doing. And the producer, the experienced, the counselor in our book, you know, that you could, with our interviews, we interviewed 18 of them, and you could sense it in almost every one of them. Now, will they do anything about it? It's unknown. But we see off-market listings. We see private agent networks. We see these things happening. Part of the reason, yes, but is part of it wanting to double-end a deal? Yeah, sure, we know that. Everybody knows that. But part of it is, I don't want to deal with agents anymore, don't know what they're doing, and hand over half the dollars. I just don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
If that marketplace comes unglued,
yeah,
if it frays, then things really get a little dicey for everybody. Because the whole industry, both Canada and U.S., people don't stop to think about it because it's just the way things are. Suppose it wasn't that way. Suppose it was like Europe, where we were, and RealTrends had a conference a couple years ago with no MLS, no exclusive listings. You got 8 listing agents on a property. The only guy that gets paid is the guy who gets the buyer. And the portals dominate. Is that the kind of marketplace we want? That's the one that really gets me.
Okay, so let me ask you this question then. We have all been, as agents, behind our competitor, whether we're two steps behind when it comes to video marketing, whether it becomes behind lead conversion, whatever it is. What happens, because I think there's a lot of agents out there in the industry right now that don't find themselves two or three steps behind their competitor. They're starting to find themselves two or three steps behind their consumer. And I think that's where things can get kind of scary for the sort of part-time, not in it day in and day out, the blockbuster video or the Kodak sort of experience of being behind the consumer. So how many, that analogy, you know, the frog in the boiling pot, and as the water starts to get heated up, they don't realize it's getting hot. How many agents do you think are in that pot and have no clue that the water's been getting hot fairly quickly the last 5 years?
Two-thirds.
Wow.
Because these aren't people that are dedicated to this industry as a career. They're not reading like Real Trends or, you know, our competitors, Inman, or they're not reading, they're not studying, they're not attempting to be masters of their profession. They're not working at it that way. And unless you're prepared to do that, you're going to look, those kind of people can always get a couple deals because they got friends. And a lot of consumers still pick an agent because they know them. And they don't. Ratings and reviews aside, two-thirds of consumers choose an agent because they know one or someone referred them. And so there will always be a role for them. There will always be business to be done. But increasingly, we think, especially younger consumers, millennials, Gen X, they're taking a referral. Our study showed it very clearly. They'll take a referral from a friend, then they go to Yelp or Angie's List or Zillow and check the reviews. And that's going to start to influence everybody's ultimate decision on an agent. And unless you're in the game and you're really out there and you know what you're doing, consumers, I think over time, not 2 years, but 5 years, 8 years, those kind of people, their friends are not going to use them because that agent doesn't know what they're doing. And the transaction's not getting simpler. It's getting more complex.
Completely agree.
Getting more complex. You know, consumers, you know, we all want, like with doctors, more and more people now have a way to check and see my dermatologist, my heart guy, my whatever it might be. More and more of us, and I'm a big consumer of healthcare, you get a referral. I have a doctor I've known for 25 years. They refer me to a certain doctor. I'm an old guy. Even I go check them. Even I go check to see what the reviews look like. My wife is a big user, and we're boomers. And everybody says, well, the boomers don't do that. Well, our study shows boomers are rapidly adopting the use of reviews and ratings. All of this leads to push more business towards people who are professionals full-time in the game. But right now, I mean, if you're doing two deals a year, how can you hold yourself out as somebody who's in the market and knows what's going on?
Well, especially with it changing. If you're only doing two deals a year, the market changes between deals. Like it's changed. Dave talked a little bit about that we've sort of said, you know, two-thirds. I would love two-thirds to sort of thin the herd. I think we need a thinning of the herd. Because I think the thinning of the herd definitely raises the opinion of a professional agent in the eyes of the public, for sure, too.
Yeah, which, by the way, helps everybody who's in the business.
Yes.
That's been going on for a long time, that we wanted the herd thinned. But right now, it's really happening. It's not. We always wished it before. So what did they do? Well, they increased your licensing fees $100 more, and you got to go to 10 hours of class. Well, those days are gone. That's not going to thin the herd. What's going on right now is really going to thin the herd.
I mean, the thing that we notice happening, for instance, is I've been one of those people who said for years that the 80-20 rule is not in place yet. It's not there because we have enough data to know that. But we looked at enough MLS data and our own agent data we collect for America's Best and Canada's Best. On the listing side, we're already there. On the listing side, it's already pretty much 80-20. I mean, 20-80. 20% of the agents are getting 80% of the listings. On the buyer side, probably not there yet, but it's moving that way. And what are you going to do? You're going to, if you got 20% of the agents, Canada has how many? Canada has what? Has 100,000 realtors?
Probably something like that.
Like that. About 100,000. And, you know, 20,000 of them are doing 300,000 sides, ends, right?
Yeah.
80-20. Same thing in the U.S.
Well, Steve, reading the book, I read it on vacation, and it made me happy because every chapter I got to sort of reinforced if you have a real estate business that's successful, these changes are probably actually going to benefit you. Whether it's deregulation of sort of the employee independent contractor model, whether it's the dominance of pay to play when it comes to portal websites, whether it's the online reputation, it all seemed to me that if you are a productive agent or team, things are going to sort of swing towards your favor and it's going to punish the two-thirds. So my question to you, Steve, is when I got into this business, I was 19 years old. I had 4 years before that as a personal assistant, learning the business, the ins and outs. I started really, really young. And I had great mentorships, and I was able to develop my business as I was able to start growing a mustache. As I started to mature in my looks, I was able to grow a business. I think the amount of time that we have to get from zero income per year and get up above the 100 to the 150 to $200,000 a year is shortening dramatically because I don't think you have the ability to sort of toil in between. So do you think that will be a trend, that you're going to have to latch onto a team to get your mentorship, to get you through the learning period that you just can't sort of get through and feel it out for 5 years? Because it seems to me all the trends are going to punish the sort of lower-end agent.
Well, you know, teams, you look at the teams, and, I mean, truly, if I were a brand-new agent starting out right now, I'd want to go be part of a team. I'd want the camaraderie, you know, the being with a group of professional people who know what they're doing and learn really how to do the business. Because let's face it, pre-licensing isn't going to do it. It just gives you the basics. And then you look at some of the just general training programs. You know, there's a lot of great information out there for training. What's missing is there's no accountability. Now on a team, the team people we interviewed, I mean, one thing we heard from every one of them, hire slowly, fire quickly. They bring on young people, and they're willing to invest in them and let them handle leads and let them really learn how to do the business and how to follow up and how to get out there and work, you know. But if you're just in a regular brokerage office, it's not whether there's good training. There is. A lot of companies have really good training. What they don't have is someone who's going to hold that brand new agent accountable for doing the work. Build the sphere, walk the neighborhoods. I mean, I'm amazed some of the people we interviewed say, how are you building your business? We're walking neighborhoods. I mean, you go, really? Walking neighborhoods? Said, yeah, it's really effective because nobody else is doing it. You meet a lot of great people. But teams are a great source of how to get both training and get the accountability, which is the part that's really missing. Because those teams told us they bring on new people. They hire slowly. If those people aren't willing to do the work, they're gone. They can promise them an income if they do the work.
Yeah, agreed. Dave, speak to teams and sort of your. I mean, you're a team leader. You've got guys that you brought on and mentored them, and you know, something that the brokerage model just can't or doesn't do. And especially, like I said, we don't have time to learn the business the same way. You have to do it right from the get-go, and you have to start building that online reputation, because I'm 20 years ahead of you when you're a new agent. So speak to that and sort of your experience with bringing on new agents.
Well, actually, being a team leader and being a real estate agent are two different businesses altogether.
Right.
And you know, just like Steve said, I think that's almost like a prerequisite, a requirement to get into the real estate business. You got to learn the basics first, because we're of that adage to hire slowly and fire quickly, because we're out always looking for team members, and quite frankly, we haven't found somebody who we're willing to even work with over the past couple of months, and we have had people go because they're just not willing to do the work. You know, it's the only place to start, in my opinion. Back when I started in the business, there were no teams, and all there was there's your desk, there's your phone, get to work. Well, what do you mean get to work? What am I supposed to do? Well, you figure it out. That's exactly the way I started in this business. And
but learning the basics, though, Dave and Steve, learning the basics is a very different set of basics in 2014 than it was in 1993 when I started. I mean, the basics are not basic anymore. The basics seems a whole lot more complicated. When I first started in the business, our purchase of our offers of purchase and sale were maybe 2 pages long, carbon copy. Now they're 10, 12 pages long, and 6, 7 of those pages are detailed clauses and addendums to protect my client. The basics are fundamentally different in 2014.
Well, you have to today. You have to know how to use technology. I mean, technology 20 years ago was the MLS book.
Yep.
And an HP calculator. Now you got to know how. I mean, advanced MLS searches or portal searches. These are not child's play. Finding out what the tax information is, inspection reports. I mean, interpreting inspection reports. I just bought a piece of property. I got them all. I had to call my agent and said, would you tell me what it says, please? Because they're written to protect the inspector, not to be enlightening to a consumer. I mean, you've got to know how to do online contracts. You got to know how to respond to CRMs. You got to know a lot of fundamentals of how to just use technology. And we say, well, that's all easy. Well, it's easy for people who already know how to use it. Go ahead and show somebody, sit them down and show them how to use an MLS of the kind that are out there now. It'd take them a day to figure out how to do basic search. I mean, just basic. And then how to export photos and how to move this here. And, you know, you're exactly right. And then inspection reports and then having some knowledge about how do you deal with people? How do you deal with a buyer who said, oh, by the way, here's 10 homes, I've already found them online, and you look at the 10 and you realize 4 of them are FSBOs. How are you going to interact with a for sale by owner? I mean, how does a brand new person know how to do that?
You know, the mentorship part of it for me is that, you know, some of these training programs are great, like Steve said, but the people teaching these training programs have never sold a house.
No.
So there's that other component about how to recognize when somebody's showing you buying signs and how to handle objections. Things that are real, the belly to belly personal part of the business is something that a mentor who's doing it every day, who's had a great career and who sold hundreds or thousands of homes can teach somebody. Trainers that teach these technical parts, I think it's a lot easier in my mind to teach the technology part of it is than to teach these personal skills. They have to have them, because if they don't have them, they're not going to succeed. They can have all the technology in the world, but if they don't know how to deal with people, it's a very hard thing to teach. That's where a mentor comes in and a team leader comes in that nobody can duplicate that anywhere.
Well, you know, and we one of the chapters in Game Changer, we call the do-it-yourselfers. You know, it's kind of like technology enables do-it-yourselfers. And the truth is, we just recently at, I think, TechCrunch, a conference called TechCrunch Disruptors, these new guys came out. It's called All-RE, I think, All-RE. And they've now connected it all. And we said in the book, look, it's just a matter of time before somebody connects. Look for a home, make a bid, book a showing, make a bid, get a bid, get a mortgage, get an all-in, get the inspect, and close. Never have to deal with a person. It's all online. It's web-based. It's all seamless. And these guys came out, and they were a tech crowd. Oh, we're going to do this. We're going to do that. Well, yeah, we can't. We haven't got the inspection piece figured out yet. We haven't quite got the financing piece totally figured out yet. And we do have a closing services company to populate our back end, but we can't tell you who they are. And it's like all this, and you're going, there's just a lot of noise. The truth is, you pick a number, 10 to 20% of the population in Canada and the U.S. are people that are prone to try to do things themselves. But there's a couple things standing in their way, and we said it in the chapter. One, this is really an infrequent deal. People don't buy. It's not like buying a book on Amazon or getting a ticket through Expedia. This is a house or a piece of real estate you're buying. You do it every 7, 8, 10, 12 years. That's about it. It's complicated. No consumer can understand. I know I've talked to people in my neighborhood who say, I'm going to do a FSBO, and I'll just simply say you do know about Colorado seller disclosure, right, and the liability. And they go, what's that? So, well, I better read up on it before you go try to sell your house yourself. And lastly, you make a mistake buying a book, big deal. Bottle of wine, yeah, you can survive. Go ahead and screw up buying or selling a house, and it could haunt you forever. People instinctively know that. They just do. They know what they don't know. You'll always have that 10, 20% of people that are willing to try it and do it themselves. In anything. I mean, I have a son who lives on a ranch. He's decided he knew how to wire the whole house for a security system. Now, fortunately, he had six years of training in the Navy, so he figured it out, but it took him a month to figure it out. And he had to buy all kinds of tools that are only one time. Consumers generally get this. They get it. They get that. So technology can make it easier. It really can. And having gone through a transaction, it made it a lot easier. I really enjoyed it, all the paperwork side of stuff. But, you know, and that's one of the chapters we covered, you know, and then when that goes to, you know what it is we keep finding? And we wrote a book 3.5 years ago called Game Plan, and we kind of looked back. Game Plan was looking back 35 years. We said, you know what? For as long as I've been in this industry, agents and brokers walk around in sheer dread that they're going to be replaced. It's been going on for a long, long time. I mean, 35 years ago, by the way, the great fear was Merrill Lynch and Sears, that they were going to take over the industry. And everybody got, oh, look out for those guys, and then Remax snuck in the door. And then in the 90s, NAR goes, oh, my God, the lions are coming over the hill. The IBMs and Microsofts are going to wipe us out. And while everybody was paying attention to that, a little company out of Austin, Texas called Keller Williams came in and changed things going on. And now we've got the Zillow. Third iteration called Zillow and Trulia. You know, and we do a chapter called The Listing Portals Grab the Consumer Relationship, right? By the way, they already have. They already have. Part of our study, which we couldn't publish, was we asked consumers, recent buyers and sellers, their familiarity with a whole bunch of real estate brand names. All I can share is this. The people who recognize Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com, the percentage of people, not that far behind the people who recognize Remax, Coldwell Banker, Century 21, Keller Williams. There's not that much space. So they're already out there, and consumers know who they are. But isn't it interesting that it's not like they appeared yesterday. They've been around 5-6 years now. They got to combine Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com. I find 150 million people a month looking at those sites. But did you notice something? There's only about 5 million people buying a home, and that hasn't changed at all.
Yeah.
So what we have is we created a whole generation of voyeurs.
I see it all the time. I see it all the time. I'll go in and get my hair cut or something like that, go into the and the person behind the counter is on in Canada on realtor.ca just browsing out of curiosity. It's something curious. Either if the real estate's amazing. Either you want some or you want to know what your price is worth or you want something else. It's just one of those conversations. But let's talk about that particular chapter because in Canada we don't have the Zillows and the Trulias, although I'm sure it's just a matter of time.
Well, you got Rogers and Zukasa, right?
Zukasa, exactly. So how different would be the chapter on portholes, in your opinion, writing it after the news of a couple months ago of the intended merger or the acquisition, I would say, of Trulio from Zillow? Do you think the chapter reads exactly the same, Steve, or do you think there's different nuances now? Do you think the moderate outcome or the impact is still the same, or do you think it's different now that maybe a few more eggs are in the same basket?
It doesn't change it at all, period. Now, you know, the discussion is, well, now they're, you know, by merging, they're giant. Well, they were already pretty big in terms of viewership and their financial results. Now, that's a different issue, right? Does the merger make sense from a financial point of view? And that is, there's a lot of people that have either they're very bullish or they're very bearish on it. Having them together, can they produce better information tools quicker? Yes, I think they can. If they're combined, they combine their R&D, They should be able to move quicker, faster, produce more interesting tools. Do I really think that changes our finding? No, I don't. Because I think consumers, again, and what consumers are finding out is they're finding out, and all of us have anecdotal research dealing with friends who have looked at Zillow and Trulia, tried to sell a home based on their price model and failed. Or went to Trulia and Zillow and found two homes they liked and got in their car and went and drove and found out they were both not on the market. It's happening more and more. So they have a big job ahead of them. They have got to get their data so it's accurate and timely and complete and thorough before the consumers lose faith that they're a trusted source to go to.
And my impression is this: when it comes to the Zillows and the Trulias, and speaking with a lot of great agents that we've had on the show, that one third at the top aren't crying and, like you say, have their knickers in a knot. It's the bottom two thirds that the sky is falling, but the sky is falling on tech, on video, on customer experience. It's falling for all these same topics. It's not just one or the other.
No, and I'll share a story. And part of the research, we went and spent some time with some of the top people at Zillow and Trulia, right? And we're sitting talking to Rich Barton, who's co-founder, you know, of Zillow. And we had a nice meeting, asked a lot of questions. Travis Saxton from Real Trends and I were there. And Rich Barton said, you know, it's really interesting. I know people are like, there's a lot of people that fear us or are afraid of what we'll do or don't like us and blah, 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 blah. He said, you know, we turn and look over our shoulder and we worry about Google and Amazon and Apple, who could swallow us whole. And he said, we did a consumer study, not recent buyers and sellers, but we do studies, consumers, and we ask consumers, just a general consumer study, to rate their favorite real estate companies. And he said, you know, I forget whether it was number two or three, was Amazon. They're not even in the business. And consumers said, oh, yeah, Amazon real estate. You know, because they think, well, Amazon's in everything else. They must be in real estate, you know. But he says it's a race for us to build this site better and better and better. Now, do I think they can? Yeah. Do I think they can get a lot better? Yep. Do I think they will? Yeah, I think they're going to get better. Will they be good enough that they replace somebody in our industry or disrupt it? A Wall Street guy who's got a lot of money bet on this thing, did a lot of research. We ended up on the phone with him several times. Really smart guy, did a lot of homework himself. He came back and he said, you know, I don't see this quite working out for them and the numbers unless, number one, they get so powerful that sellers insist their home be listed on the Zillow, Trulia website, and those guys can actually charge a listing fee to do that. Or they get so good and the industry is so asleep that Zillow literally blows the MLSs out of the water, in which case they could command a market premium. That wasn't my words. That's not my thinking, but that's a Wall Street guy with money in play who said, I think they have a great business. I just don't think the numbers they're currently valued at are justified by their current approach. But you know what? That's all that side of it. You know, there's nothing we can see or even guess at that causes consumers to just totally change that they're going to use a professional person to buy or sell a home. There's nothing there.
Well, you know what, and I think the issue is something that, Dave, did you want to say something real quick?
Well, yeah, this Zillow thing. I mean, I look at it from a different perspective. Quite frankly, without being too bold, I don't care whether Zillow or Trulia Survivor go out of business at all. But in the interim, while they're able to drive me a ton of leads, which I pay for, okay, ask Chris Fiker about that. He's one of the guests we've had on our show. Ask him about Zillow. Ask me about Zillow. We have under contract this week two Zillow leads. Now, I pay for that stuff, but quite frankly, they're sending me leads, and these leads are valuable, and that's all I look at them as.
Yeah.
And And I consider myself in the top third. I'm not in that bottom two-thirds. So the top third, I guarantee you, there's a ton of real estate agents that are going, Zillow, I don't care. They can send me leads. I can put my reviews up there. I have my reviews hooked up to my regular website. People are going there. I'm going to use them as long as I can, and yeah, I'm going to make money off them.
My
ROI is phenomenal.
Yeah, we interviewed one of the top teams we interviewed. The guy has a 10-person team. He said he spends $20,000 a month with the three portals. He said, I get about 150 qualified leads, and I have two buyer agents. That's all they do is work on those leads. We close out of every month of 150 leads. We close about an average of 8 deals over 18 months will come out of that month of leads. And I can do the math. I said, you're making $10,000 a month. He said, yeah. He said, now, that's not the core of my business. The core of my business is still repeat and referral. But he said, incremental, that is a beautiful, profitable, incremental piece of my business. Another top team, a woman out of the Chicago area, said, I use Zillow and Trulia not for my current core, but to reach my next generation customers.
Put them into your referral sheet.
Yeah. She said, I want them to know who I am and recognize me. So I spend a lot of money reaching younger people through Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com. It's what I do. And, people make a big deal. Yeah, so people are, it's like, it's not going to wreck the business. I said, well, did the classified newspapers wreck the business? We used to spend half of our ad dollars in those things.
Half. Well, I mean, Steve, both those people you spoke about, they're running a business. They're spending money. They see the input, the return on investment.
Yes.
That's something that the general industry just has a hard time doing. And there's a couple more topics I really want to get to, but I don't know how much time you have. But one of the things about the Zillia, the Trulias, the Googles, the Apples, the Amazons was something I believe in a whole lot. But Mike Rizika made a quote in the book that simply says, "I suspect the real estate generalists serving an entire metro area will be less prevalent as a model in the future, because we're going to go niche. There is no way Zillow, Trulia, Amazon, any of these things can walk a neighborhood with a buyer or seller like I can and tell you about which school is the best because their new principal is this person and is taking this education in this way." Or there's just no way that local information that Nobu Hada told us on the show, the great quote, give your clients something they can't Google, it might disrupt the brokerage model the way Uber has done, but the taxi drivers, the car drivers for Ubers are the real estate agents. They're still picking up and dropping off people. The taxi industry might be disrupted, but they're still going to want to walk the neighborhood with a professional, in my opinion, like myself. It might disrupt the MLS model. It might disrupt the brokerage model, but I don't think it is a concern for the real estate agent.
No, we are in agreement on that. It's, you know, the brands, the major brands out there, existing retail real estate brands, should they be concerned? I know they're concerned, and yes, they should be concerned. If a Zillia, and by the way, the word we get from them is they're likely to keep them separate. So it'll be Zillow and Trulia, and it makes some sense. Can that become a real estate brand? Well, as I told someone, it already is a real estate brand. Just because they don't directly employ agents doesn't mean the consumers don't look at Zillow and Trulia and Realtor.com as a real estate brand. By the way, we proved that in our consumer study. They look at them as it's a real estate brand. They provide this, but not all of that. And so we cover this stuff in a couple different chapters, and the counselors and facilitators, and we've already talked about that a little bit. But it's like while everybody's watching all that stuff, we've got litigation that challenged the independent contractor status. You want to talk about what would happen if that goes out the window and a broker has to pay or compensate a person? Well, then everybody we interviewed in the book, leaders of brokerage firms, MLSs, they all said if that were to happen, in the U.S., we'd probably lose 60% of the membership just like that.
But not the good agents.
No, because why? Well, teams already employ many of their people like employees. And brokers for top producers, it's not a problem to have them as employees. That's not a problem. It's the hundreds of thousands of agents they have doing one or two deals. They could not afford them. They can't afford to employ them. I mean, California, I know, there's one part of the litigation against the independent contractors in California. Now, do we think it's going to happen? No, we think very low probability. But we said low probability, but if it did, it'd be a huge impact. But it's a very low probability. But I think California, I heard a number that if you had to employ a person as an agent in California, all in required base compensation, health care, all that stuff, would run about $37,000 a year. How many agents can you afford doing two deals a year if it costs you $37,000 a year?
Yeah.
Zero.
I don't know how people afford to be in the business at $2 a year, or two deals a year, independent contractor or not. It baffles my mind. But there are so many other things in this book. There is chapters on review sites. There's chapters on that. It's amazing stuff. But one of the things I think the likelihood of the mergers and of the associations and the MLSs is another huge topic. I mean, you have to read this book. It's fantastic. But one of the things I think that is the biggest impact for our viewership is the overriding theme throughout the book for me was the fact that, and I think it's stated in the book, that the agent has to make an explicit choice, a black or white choice between being a facilitator going forward or being a counselor going forward. One or the other. No in between. That's how I read it.
Yeah,
talk to our audience about what you mean by facilitator, what you mean by counselor, and the impact of having to choose one or the other, and how soon do you think that choice needs to be made?
So, bottom line, counselors are those agents or teams that are full-time, large production, study their craft, work on their profession, full-time, full-on, and because of that experience and knowledge, they bring that high level of counselor relationship to their customers. It's not just looking for homes. It's they can talk to a customer about that house versus this house, that neighborhood versus this neighborhood, traffic patterns you need to be aware of, and if you do this, it's counseling. It's understanding the why of people who are, Simon Sinek's great videos, the why does a person want to buy now or there? What are they feeling? What are they thinking? A facilitator, many of them perfectly competent to process a transaction for a customer, but they don't bring anything else to the table because they don't have the experience to do it. They know how to get a transaction done. That's a facilitator. And by the way, we also said that's the same for brokerage companies. There are brokerage companies that bring a lot of value to agents, and the others who just make it really easy for an agent to do their business. And by the way, we said clearly in the book, there's nothing wrong with either model. Just don't pretend you're one when you're the other.
Hey, Steve, just for, and I know Dave will speak to this, I'm definitely a counselor. I think Dave is a counselor. But I sat down with a buyer yesterday, a seller that's going to be a buyer, and wanted to look at a particular piece of property in a particular neighborhood and really wanted to pursue that piece of property. I said, let's go grab a cup of coffee. I opened up my questionnaire that I ask all my buyers, talking about lifestyle and schools and safety and sense of community and all these questions that we have that are all a lot more than square footage, age, new roof, foundation, like a lot more than that. Right. And at the end of the conversation, he went, I don't want to buy that house, do I? And I go, no, you don't want to buy the house for all these reasons. If I was a facilitator, I could have made my commission check, but probably repeat and referral business, probably not going to happen. I've made that one deal. I didn't take care of them. Yeah. So that's the difference. Growing a business, I think the counselor makes sense. For a facilitator, aren't they going to have to reinvent their client base every year because they aren't?
Generally speaking, like I said, they're going to be people that tend to get a few referrals a year from people they know or from neighborhood friends or church friends or whatever it might be, but they're not working full-time to build their business. they're not actually, if they have a sphere of 100 friends or 300 friends, you'll find facilitators aren't outreaching to those people. They're not calling them. They're not direct mailing them very frequently. They're not really engaged. They're kind of just there to get a referral. Maybe they get a referral from their brokerage. Maybe they get one online. You know, they did a little thing on Zillow or Trulia, you know, some website somewhere, and they got some business. Nothing wrong. And they can execute just fine. But they're not going to be able to look like you did with your customer and say, tell me what it is you're trying to achieve here. I mean, it's like going to a seller. You know, why are you selling your house? You've been here 20 years. Well, we want to downsize. Well, we want to do this. Well, when you say downsize, tell me what that means to you. I mean, you go into a condominium type, or is this assisted living? What about where your kids and family live? I mean, is there a place you want to be? It's all the questions the counselor would ask as they try to really get a picture of who this person is and what they're really thinking and feeling about the move. I mean, we've done studies with consumers before. It's fascinating, but we all discover that buyers are, believe it or not, buyers are generally more satisfied than sellers. We asked Harris in our studies, why is that? And they said, psychologically, sellers are giving something up. Buyers are getting what they want. Sellers are leaving 20 years of memories. My kids were born here and raised here. This was one of the nicest places we ever lived, and now we're getting transferred from, you know, Denver, Colorado. We're getting transferred someplace that's not Denver, Colorado, that's not as nice. And maybe they're happy. Maybe they're not. Maybe the kids are not happy. So it's really fascinating that good agents take the time to find out, you know. And, you know, as far as this whole topic, one of the analogies I didn't write about in the book, but one thing before we go, because I need to get going fairly soon, but Lon Welsh came up with a great quote, and it's twice. We printed it at the beginning of the book and the end of the book. And he said, the truth is, if you survive the last 10 years, more likely than not, you'll survive the next 10 years. But the other thing, it's a brief story. I was playing in the senior PGA Pro-Am golf outing about 10 years ago. The pro with us was Lanny Watkins, who in his time was hugely competitive, hugely good. But we were playing on this turn, walking along the course with him, and it was the time when Tiger Woods was just killing people out there. And somebody said, well, what are they going to do about Tiger? You know, he's taking everything. And Lanny stopped and he looked. He said, you know, what? My time it was Trevino, Nicholas, Palmer, Casper, Player, Watson, Weisskopf. You go down the list. He said, you know what? If you were going to win, you had to step your game up. Every year you had to work on your game. And he said, the guys out here, unless they want Tiger to win 30 majors, they're going to have to work on their game and bring it to a different level to compete with him, because he's a whole different level of player. Of course, time has gone on by now, and Tiger hasn't won a major in, I think, 4 or 5 years now. Rory's winning a lot, but you just saw a brand new guy, Horschel, win the FedEx Cup. These guys are stepping their game up. The same thing with brokers and agents. They're going to have to step it up in terms of whether you're going to decide whether you want to be a counselor or facilitator, and then go find out what that means.
Yeah,
that's what you got to do. The rest of the stuff we wrote about, we cover it pretty thoroughly. You know, we put all of our research in the back of the book so people can look at the actual stuff. And anyway, we think future prosperity, good agents and good brokers, just step your game up, work hard, forget all the rest of this crap.
I couldn't, Dave and I couldn't agree with you more. Steve, a couple of things. Our viewership numbers haven't waved since minute 5 of the show. Normally, you know, as the show gets on, people have to go back to work. Haven't waved. People are just, Twitter is being absolutely silent, which is a rarity. The reason is everyone's hanging on your word, Steve. The ton of value you've brought to our audience. Can't thank you enough. Dave and I haven't spoken hardly at all like we normally do because we're sitting and absorbing it, Dave, right? I mean, your takeaway, yeah. Whatever. Just sitting here listening to a real smart guy.
Yep, you heard my takeaway, Reddy. It's all there. It's all validated. What we've been saying, this gentleman just validated our whole show for the last year and a half.
Well, you guys are too kind, but I do appreciate those words. And you know, we published it so people would have a guide to say, what do I need to think about? What do I need to worry about? And most importantly, what do I not need to stop worrying about?
Steve, where can people get the book? I know that they can go to realtrends.com. You can also get it as a Kindle version on Amazon. And look, all iPad and iPhone people out there, there's a Kindle app. You don't need to have a Kindle to get it. But let people know where people can go and get
realtrends.com. Realtrends.com publications. The book is there. It's on the front page. You can order it. You can, if you order a lot of copies because you want to give them to your agents if you're a broker or whatever, there's a discount once you buy a few copies. And I'm looking over my office over here, right over on the side of the office. Can't shift the camera. I got about, 300 copies of it sitting right over here. So we'd love to sell you a copy. And, you'll find, we tell people, said, don't try to plow through the whole thing all at once. Start with what, look at all the chapter headings, pick a chapter you think you're most interested in, start there.
Yeah, I couldn't put it down. I mean, I know it's one of those books that I will go back and revisit. Steve, can't thank you enough for coming on and giving an hour of your time. We appreciate it greatly. Guys, everyone go to realtrends.com. Spectacular, ongoing information, newsletters, sign up for all that sort of stuff. Steve, fantastic.
Yep.
Next week's show, our guest is still questionable. We still have to iron that out. This has happened a couple times in recent weeks, but we plan to be on the air Friday, September the 26th, 10 o'clock Pacific, 1 o'clock Eastern. Dave, thank you so much. Steve, thank you. If you have any referrals heading out to the East Coast of the United States, get a hold of Dave. He'll put you in the hands of the right RE/MAX agent. Any referrals West Coast of Canada, get a hold of me, and we'll put you in the hands of the right agent. And as Melanie Gelly of RE/MAX Fort McMurray wants us to end every show, tell five other agents about Mobile Agent TV. Our audience grows every week. We're able to reach out to really incredible, smart people like Steve Murray from Real Trends that will give us an hour of the time. We appreciate it. Cade, thank you. Thanks, Steve. Thanks, Dave. We'll see everyone next week.